Is South Korea the biggest loser from the failed summit between the U.S. and North Korea? This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. The South Korean President Moon Jae-in says meaningful progress was made during the two-day talks between the U.S. and North Korea, despite their failure to reach a deal on sanctions relief and denuclearization. Mr. Moon said the summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un in Vietnam gave the two leaders mutual understanding and trust. The BBC's Robin Brandt reports from Hanoi.
South Korea's president would have hoped for a more celebratory atmosphere to unveil his ambitious plan for closer economic ties with the North. But instead, he had to repeat that progress can only come once the elusive denuclearization is agreed. In a speech in front of a crowd of thousands to mark the 100th anniversary of the country's independence movement, Moon Jae-in said there had been progress in Hanoi. But now South Korea had an even more important role to play. The momentum has undoubtedly been slowed, but the onus will be on Seoul to try to rekindle the talks that South Korea's president has invested so much in.
Robin Brandt. Well, Alison Evans is an analyst at IHS Market. She explains South Korea's stake in improved relations between the U.S. and North Korea.
First and foremost, South Korea's largest national security threat is North Korea. And the other thing is that President Moon Jae-in himself came to power on an agenda of resolving corruption. He also promised to improve the economy and is known as someone who has worked on improving inter-Korean relations in the past. And what we've seen over the past few years of his tenure is that he hasn't been able to make that much progress on the corruption front and on the economic front. In fact, South Korea's unemployment rating is the highest it's been in about 19 years. So the one part of his agenda that Moon Jae-in has been able to deliver on has been improving relations with North Korea.
Now, there have also been economic ties between the South and the North. There was a joint industrial project which had to be scrapped because of these tensions. Economically, what's been at stake?
For North Korea's economy, these joint North-South projects don't actually contribute too much, but they were definitely a loss. The Kaesong industrial zone that you're talking about was operated by South Korean companies until February 2016, after North Korea's nuclear test. Then President Park Geun-hye closed that as a punishment, essentially, for North Korea continuing its nuclear weapons development. I think that's something that South Korea would look to open again, in part because Moon Jae-in brought big South Korean business leaders with him on his last trip to Pyongyang in an attempt to look forward to South Korean investment in North Korea again. One of the other locations is a resort called Mount Kumgang in North Korea. There haven't been any South Korean tourists there since about 2008, however. The other element that the North Koreans and South Koreans are looking to do now is to join their two railway networks. But in order to continue, they need exemptions from international sanctions. And North Korea and South Korea were hoping probably to receive those after a successful summit between US President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. But because that summit ended early, without a joint declaration or any agreements, it now means that sanctions exemptions for those projects are much less likely to come in the coming year.
Alison Evans. Let's do the numbers. Chinese stocks are leading global markets higher after figures showed manufacturing rose from January lows. At the same time, Eurozone manufacturing activity fell for the seventh straight month in February, sliding into contraction for the first time since 2013. And shares of Royal Dutch Shell are slightly higher despite warning that prosecutors in the Netherlands are preparing to issue criminal charges over a $1.3 billion Nigerian oil deal in 2011. Now, as we live longer, governments are grappling with higher healthcare costs. So could technology reduce some of that financial burden? The BBC's Katie Silver reports.
There's different modes that you can go through with the glasses. So depending on your environment and what your vision is actually like, you can change through different settings.
This is Rebecca Liu. She's an engineer for the company Oxide, which began at Oxford University. Their product is called Prism Glasses, wearable technology glasses for people with impaired sight.
So at the moment, you've just clicked colour edges, so all my peripheral vision's gone. It's almost like I'm looking at the world as a television screen.
So we found this mode is quite helpful for people when they struggle to see things like facial features.
Prism glasses are one of thousands of innovations on show at the giant health tech conference.
Over the last few years, dementia has overtaken, for both men and women in the UK, as the number one cause of death.
This is health economist Chris Hafner.
It costs, you know, the dementia tax, as it's called, is £26 billion a year. So the average dementia patient is pulling about £32,000, almost the average salary in the City of London, to pay for their care.
That's almost $33 billion overall, or more than $40,000 for each patient.
Reminiscence is a huge component to preventing dementia. So just the simple act of engaging with an older individual and talking about their past experiences where they're generating memories. So we can use technology like, you know, Alexa and commercial devices like this to promote greater social interaction amongst this aging population.
Social isolation and eyesight deterioration are undoubtedly issues which many elderly people face. Another, which perhaps isn't spoken about as much, is incontinence.
These simple pair of shorts basically can release one in three women from the misery of wearing pads for the rest of their lives.
Marcia Carlecci is Europe's marketing manager at Atlantic Therapeutics, which makes Inovo. They look like Lycra bicycle shorts with an inbuilt transistor that transmits electricity to stimulate the muscles of the pelvic floor. As technology influences more and more facets of our working lives, exhibitors here are betting big on it revolutionising the final years of our lives as well.
That's Katie Silver reporting from London, and I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.